Obviously, childhood anxiety is very similar to adult anxiety. And one of the reasons I'm so passionate about it, apart from the fact that I've suffered with anxiety all my life, is that for exactly that reason, that if we can't address anxiety, and the younger the better, if you think about it, if the world isn't a safe place, if I have to scan my environment every time I go somewhere to make sure that it's safe, if I'm afraid of lots of things, then after a while the world is a pretty scary place. And if that happens long enough and I don't have some rational responses to some of the scary things that actually happen, in the middle part of the board that Kerry had, we had life. And an anxious person tries to avoid all the scary things in life, including those learning things. It means that I will have a very high likelihood of becoming depressed or even suicidal, because life sometimes is scary, but to an anxious person, it's scary at some level constantly. Anxious people live with fear constantly. So if we can help our children recognise anxiety and address it, we're going a long way to helping them cope with adulthood and their whole life. So childhood anxiety disorders are chronic and tend to persist into adulthood, and it is linked to later life drug and alcohol abuse. In fact, I've spent a couple of hours with some Alcoholics Anonymous groups. It was part of my training, and I was really struck by the fact that when they shared their story, they all talked about how their anxiety, or how they started using alcohol at about age 14, 15, 16, because that was the time when you started having parties and you started having to socialise a bit more. You know, it wasn't about going to a kid's party and playing games where you know what to expect. It was about going to a party where you sit around and you're actually not quite sure who you're going to talk to, what are you going to say, do you look like a dork, is everybody staring at you? And so to relax them, they would have a drink. That was the story of every 10 of those people in that group, that they started when they were teenagers because they didn't know how else to deal with their anxiety. It made me feel so sad. These people were all in their 50s and 60s still struggling with alcoholism because of anxiety that hadn't been treated. So it's a really great thing to deal with. Strengthening families to support and enhance each other's growth as unique individuals and as members of a unit working together is inherently Christian, because God made families as units and he also made communities as a bigger unit filled with smaller units. So generalised childhood anxiety is the medical term, and it refers to a child's response to a threat or stress that is out of proportion to the threat. Of course, the child should be afraid when he's standing on the curb and about to cross into traffic that a car might come and he better step back a step. But when the child is afraid of everything, or more afraid than your average person, more afraid than what is really realistic, that's when we call it anxiety. A child who regularly and consistently worries about things that most children don't worry about. Worry that is debilitating and causes immense distress to the child. The threat is imagined, like the boogie monster under the bed. We know it's not there, but they are convinced that it's there. Or their concerns might be distorted. I've got a headache, so that means I've got cancer. And you'd be surprised that if children, anxious children, could speak their concerns, they really do worry about things like that. And it's worry that's not time limited. Panic disorder is different to anxiety because it's about a certain situation. Generalised anxiety is when you're just always a little bit anxious, always scanning the environment. An anxious adult scans the environment. I read the newspaper every day. I've only recently worked out it is because I'm interested in the world, but it's more about the fact that I want to know that if there's a threat coming, I'm prepared and I'm ready. So I scan my environment every day by reading the newspaper. So one of the things I've tried to do to soothe myself is to read it and say, yes, but that's I'm only reading all the bad news, and I also take myself off newspaper reading a few days a week and make sure that I can sit with that and cope with that. So what are the characteristics of a child suffering general anxiety? The emotions, fear and agitation, they're easier to spot. It can show in poor concentration, negative thoughts or irrational thoughts. The poor concentration, not being able to focus, is a pretty good sign often of a child with anxiety. So children come to school and their parents have just split up and we expect them to be able to learn. Their whole world is turned upside down and we want them to still be able to function fully. It's not going to happen. We need to be mindful of that. The physiological signs are that we gear up for fight or flight. That's what a fear is supposed to do. If we're really afraid of something, our body automatically goes into the flight or fight mechanisms. But for someone who suffers with generalised anxiety, that's happening all the time. They actually never come down from that. They've got muscle tension. They've got headaches. They do have tummy aches. Those tummy aches that little child has every time he thinks about going to school, they're not made up. They're not making up they've got a tummy ache. They really do have a tummy ache, but it's not because of something they've eaten or a disease. It's because of the muscles being so tight. It's that same tummy ache that we get when we're really scared about something. Or it might be the butterflies, nausea, blushing. You know, when you get a bit anxious, let's just pick on someone in the audience that won't mind being picked on, Weber. What happens to you when you get really nervous? What are the physical symptoms?
Right now.
Yeah, right now. I thought that would help.
Your heart starts to race.
Mm-hmm.
Your muscles do tense up. I think that's a thing.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, focusing on the fear at hand.
Yeah.
Let's pick on someone else. Kerry, what happens when you suddenly get very anxious? Talk too fast is a good one. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Now, some of us as adults aren't aware of when we're getting anxious, and someone says, you look very worried, or what's the matter? And we say, there's nothing wrong with me. You know, and it's obvious that we're anxious, but we won't deal with it. It might be flushing from here on up. You know, a lot of people get that. It might be getting an itchy skin, getting a bit of a rash. That's a sign, can be a sign of anxiety. There are lots of signs, but the great thing is that if we can help our child become aware of those signs, then they get to know that they're anxious before they even have to use any of their mind. Like, as we're older, we can say, oh, yeah, I'm feeling a bit anxious. It's okay. I can handle that. But a child, it's so much easier if we can just assist them and train them to recognise their own anxiety symptoms. So it might be the stomach ache, it might be the talking too much, it might be completely withdrawing and hardly talking. Find out what the signs are, observe them in your children when they're afraid, when they're anxious, and then when they behave like that and you don't know that there's any concern, you can go, ah, there's something in this environment that is affecting my child that they're getting a bit anxious about. I regret that in our child rearing, sometimes I mistook one of our boys' anxieties as being naughtiness. So they might have been disciplined for being naughty, when we can look back and say, actually, those situations, particularly social situations in our case, were very anxiety building. And so I have a saying that anxiety makes us obnoxious. It makes all of us obnoxious in one way or another. If you think about it within your relationships, when you get really anxious or when someone you know gets anxious, there are some things they do that really make them obnoxious. I wonder if you could think about that for a second now. What is it about yourself, preferably? But if that's not clear to you, ask someone who knows you well when you go home and they'll know. What is it before a big trip or when you've got to do something you don't like doing or whatever it is that you get a little bit anxious about, how do you behave that lets everyone know, uh-oh, better be good because Mum's on the prowl. Mum, there's something that's annoying Mum. And would anyone like to share what that might be? Yep.
I can always tell my wife when she's anxious about something, she's squeezed down the front stairs every time, guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
There's something ritualistic about that.
Yeah, so what that's doing is getting rid of some of that excess energy that anxiety gives us, because we're in a flight or fight mode. We've got more energy. So cleaning windows, cleaning stairs, yep. They're things that we might do. So the good thing about that is, even if you didn't know before that she's anxious, you can actually go up to her and say, is there something on your mind? Is there something I can help with? Whatever it is. And isn't that great that we could actually pick that up in someone, especially in children, to help them realise what's going on? Tantrums, agitated, rude. You know, sometimes children are so rude to people who have come to the house whom they don't know. Well, if they're not usually rude, perhaps that's not actually naughtiness as much as it is anxiety. But we deal with it as a discipline reaction instead of taking them aside and saying, it's okay, we know these people. I'd like you to say hello, but we're not asking you to play with them necessarily, whatever it is, but you can actually pick up on the physical symptom. So use them to your advantage as a learning thing. And also, you know, the old freeze or stare, and Kerry would be very familiar with this from some kids, that they just get into the stare. I'm not agitated. That can be a way of focusing, responding to anxiety. They're not actually meaning to stare and be rude. That's actually just how they're coping with all the stuff that's inside. So I'm not saying that we should excuse anxious behaviour. I'm just saying if we understand it for what it is, it helps. Anxiety is exhausting. A child who's anxious a lot is going to be more tired than average because they're always on the watch. They're always on the alert. That's tiring. It affects their schoolwork. They can't focus on anything well. Maybe you know that your child is capable of learning here, but they're only learning here. Well, there may be a reason of anxiety behind that you could just observe and see what's going on. Their emotional system overrides their thinking system. That is the big thing with anxiety. I went to a conference on the brain and anxiety with a professor last week, and he showed physiologically how things in your brain actually change once you get into that fear mode. And the smart part of your brain, the part that thinks things through and can be rational, is overridden by the emotions. So a very good example of this is very often men who close down when we're in an argument, because we tend to win with words, and the man knows he's not going to win and he's going to have to put up with this lecture for however long she's going to go on for, and he closes down. He is actually, we say, what are you thinking? Like that's going to help. And he goes, I'm not thinking anything. And we go, how could you possibly not be thinking anything? That's ridiculous. You must be thinking something about what I've just said. And he has been emotionally flooded. This is a really stressful situation for that guy. And we're not making it any easier. And we're expecting them to talk and to share, like, duh. So it's important to remember, even, and a child, when they're anxious, it's difficult to reason with them at that stage because they're just really emotionally, and you know what that's like when you're panicking about something. You know that something is okay because everybody else does it, but you just can't get over that. So if you can think of anxiety as emotional reactivity, and in the board that Kerry had this morning, we're moving from the immature side to the more mature side when we respond to life. But when we react to life, we remain on that immature level because we're just reacting. Someone calls us a name, we react. But if we're responding and thinking, well, do I have to listen to that? What does it really mean? Etc. We respond so much better and we learn to develop maturity and integrity, being who we are without worrying about what other people think. So anxiety is the enemy of growth, of maturing, and it is the enemy of good listening. Because if I'm really anxious, I can't listen to what you're saying. I am just so emotionally flooded with what I need to get out. If someone's not a good listener, learning to be a good listener is a great way to get rid of some of that anxiety, to realise that I don't have to have an answer for everything. To actually sit with my own anxiety is the goal. That feeling anxious is okay. Yep, I know when I get this tummy ache that I'm anxious, but I'm still going to go out there and enjoy myself and have fun. I'm just going to know that that tummy ache means, yep, I'm a bit worried, and that's okay. That's the important thing we can learn, and that's the important thing for us as parents, that it's okay. Little Johnny is a bit uptight, that's okay. What we don't want to do is get the fire hydrant out and help our child avoid what it is that they're scared of. Because that's exactly what we're doing when we jump in and say, oh, little Johnny's anxious, I can make this better for him. Well, we can take away the things that are adding up to that, what he's afraid of, but how's he going to learn to deal with it? And all the child is going to learn is that when you're anxious, you avoid the situation. Well, that isn't going to work very well. It only works when your mum and dad are helping you to avoid it, but it doesn't work later on. And you really can't enjoy life if you're busy avoiding everything and scanning your environment the whole time to see what pitfalls there are. So it's really important as a parent, going down the slippery dip, you might hurt yourself, but you know that's okay. We don't have to avoid the slippery dip because we might hurt ourselves. It's okay. What could happen? What would that mean? Would you like to have a go with me? And so there's steps. So I talk about anxiety as digging holes. The child avoids going out to new places, prefers the safety of home. So there's holes in their life. Limited socialising, doesn't like going to parties or initiating conversations with others. Sleepovers are stressful. Sleepovers are very stressful for an anxious child. Limited friendships, and therefore they increase their loneliness because they keep their friendships to the very safe friends that they have. But when they most need peer support, especially as teenagers, they don't have it because they only have one or two friends. And if one of those moves away, then they don't have that peer support that they need. For a young child, they avoid show and tell. I'm sure Kerry's heard many excuses. Very often it's a matter of, I haven't got anything important to say, I'm a nobody, nobody wants to listen to me, or just sheer terror at the thought. And so rather than helping them to avoid it, we give them ways of having something to talk about that's safer. Well, you can bring a toy in, how about you just tell us who you got that toy from, that sort of thing. Reading aloud. Some of you would have been terrified about reading aloud when you went to school because you didn't feel that you really read well enough, or you knew you weren't a good reader, and yet the teacher would insist that everyone have their turn, and it was just really anxiety producing. So one way to get out of having to read aloud if it induces that much anxiety is to be naughty just before. You get sent out of the room and you don't have to read aloud. So if you can see the signs, you can see how that could help. Avoids answering questions in class for fear of mistakes. Avoids walking alone. A dog may be loose. The rain may turn to thunder. Avoids going to bed because the boogie monster might be there. Avoids exams. May leave school early to avoid failure. You see this obviously older than 8-year-olds, but eventually if we help them avoid all these things as parents because we don't want them to hurt, they're going to develop this fear of failure constantly. But you can avoid failure if you just don't go there. So you might leave school at 15 because you don't want to be a failure in year 12. And actually, you don't really want to, but it feels like you want to because you're so afraid of what might happen if you go to year 12 and you don't do as well as you think you should. And very often the young child says, I don't want to do it. And that very often means I'm scared. But it's not really socially acceptable, and kids learn this pretty early, to say I'm scared. I mean, how often would a kid hear their dad say I'm scared? And so they say, I don't want to do it. They do really want to do it. We know that they want to do it because it's something they enjoy. They may have been talking about it for the last week, but they get there and they say, I don't want to do it. And you want to pull your hair out because this has taken effort to get them to this point. If we can just acknowledge that, yep, I know you're feeling a bit worried and you're probably worried about this or what are you worried about? Tell me about it. It's so different, isn't it, to pulling our hair out and saying, well, I've got you here and you're going to blink and well enjoy yourself. Or other words. An anxious child avoids asking for things due to anxiety about the parent's money situation. So we didn't even know that something was going on at school because our child didn't ask us for the money because they were worried because they've heard us talk about money or not having enough, and they don't want to bother us with their anxiety. An anxious child avoids tasks and procrastinates and wants others to do for them. Now, they might want others to do for them because they're being a prince or a princess. And this is where we need wisdom and we ask God. We also observe. Maybe they want us to do for them because they're really anxious about this activity. So observe the symptoms. That's where physical symptoms are really good to understand. The anxious child avoids risky or even slightly naughty behaviour. They might be the very good child at school because they never want to get into trouble. That would be terrifying. It's exhausting for the family too. It's exhausting having an anxious child. And it's easy to view an anxious child as a problem. At best, their behaviour is inconvenient. And so they come to counselling because they want you to fix their child. But actually, it's a family behaviour. So if we're going to step in and rescue them and get the fire hydrants out as soon as they get anxious, then we're just helping them to be there. Very often a husband and wife have got a lot of anxiety between them and the child picks that up. And so it's very often the child who is least resilient who picks up the most anxiety between family members. So we see families very much as a system. You know the old saying, watch out, mum's not in a good mood, and if mum's not in a good mood, the whole family's got it. If mum's in a great mood, that helps the whole family. I mean, that works for everybody. It's not just mum. If dad's cranky, it affects the whole family. Even if little Johnny is cranky, it affects the whole family dynamics. So we want to find a way to do this, but it's not about fixing a child. It's about fixing how we relate. We talk about not blaming a person, but looking for the problem area and dealing with that and changing the dynamics. So I want to read to you something from Isaiah very quickly. But it is a very good example, and you'll be able to pick up examples too, even in the press, for instance, with Julia Gillard and her anxious behaviour. Isaiah 7 says, when Ahaz was king of Judah, King Rezin of Aram and Pekah, son of Remaliah, king of Israel, marched up to fight against Jerusalem. So these are two enemies normally, but they're going to go into cahoots because they want to fight Jerusalem. But they could not overpower it. Now the house of David was told, Aram has aligned itself with Ephraim, so the hearts of Ahaz and his people were shaken, as the trees of the forest are shaken by the wind. That's a good illustration of what anxiety feels like. Then the Lord said to Isaiah, "Go out, you and your son, to meet Ahaz at the end of the aqueduct of the upper pool on the road to Washerman's Field, and say to Ahaz, 'Be careful, keep calm, and don't be afraid. Have courage. Do not lose heart because of these two smouldering stubs of firewood, because of the fierce anger of Rezin and his company. They have plotted your ruin, saying, "Let us invade Judah, let us tear it apart and divide it among ourselves." Yet, this is what the Sovereign Lord says: it will not happen, it will not take place. However, if you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand firm at all. So God is saying to Ahaz, be careful, or Isaiah is saying to Ahaz, care of God, be careful. Think about who God is. Who's really sovereign? How much control do we really think we have? God controls men. Don't give in to fear of men. So much anxiety is about our fear of people, what they think of us, what they say about us. Do they really think I'm like this? Don't give in to the fear of men. Keep calm. It seems frightening. God knew that these enemies were coming up to Ahaz and wanted to ruin Israel. Don't let anxiety take over. Have courage. God is with us. He will never leave us. Sadly, Ahaz took no notice. Ahaz did not say, "God's in control, it's okay." And that was the beginning of the end. As parents, we need to practice the be careful, keep calm, and have courage. Parenting out of fear is very dangerous. It will negatively impact every decision we make. So we're trying to decide which school our kids will be enrolled in. We look at all the options and we think, you know what? And this is not, I'm not saying anything against homeschooling, I'm just giving an example of how we might be thinking. It's really a lot safer if my child is at home with me. I can control what they learn, I can control who their friends are, I can control actually just about everything. And so if we're homeschooling out of fear, that's not a good decision. If we're homeschooling because we genuinely believe it's the best option, that's a different matter. If we Christian school our kids out of fear, that's not a great reason. If we Christian school our kids because we genuinely believe that's the best option, go for it. And so with state schooling too. I think a lot of us withdraw our kids from state schools out of fear. Our state school system would be much better if there were more Christians in it. But there are other arguments. But I just want to say, be careful of the decisions we make, that they're not based on our fears. We have a great God. And every decision is a right one if it's, as we realise that we've made it because of our trust in God and we have courage, not based on our fear, particularly of what men may do. So a family is more than the sum of the individuals, and very often when a child has anxiety, in fact most often, it's the way that we're responding to that anxiety that continues the problem. And we can see how much it is a unit and not about just one person. When we think about marriage, 1 + 1 = 1 in marriage. And to just blame one person in the marriage for some problems you may be having is not realistic. It's a unit, it's a system. So the way that we're responding, or if we're anxious about our relationship and we're scared of losing that person or scared of consequences, we're reacting. We're not responding anymore, we're reacting. As soon as we start reacting, we're defensive. We're just going to march in and say how we feel and what's happening for us. And that's what happens as a parent of an anxious child. We start to react to their anxiety instead of responding with understanding. we react and we get cranky because this is blooming inconvenient, you having this little spastic attack while I'm trying to get ready for something. It interferes with our lives when a child is very anxious. It's not easy living with anxiety. It's not easy living with an anxious spouse. Just ask Steve and he'll tell you. So it's always the anxiety comes out of the interactions within the unit or system. And so one of the best ways that we can help our children with their anxiety is to be sure of who we are in Christ. Because if I fear God more than I fear whether other people think I'm a good mum or a bad mum, whether people think that what I'm wearing is dorky or not dorky, if I'm more aware of my awe of God and that I want to please him, then I'm not as anxious myself about whether my parenting is producing the Einstein child or whether my child is actually at the moment making me look like a failure as a parent. Well, that doesn't matter if I'm before God bringing my sin and my stuff and my anxieties to God and not worrying about what other people think of me. So understanding who I am, that he's chosen me, he's adopted me. I am a child of his. I'm also not too keen on the prince and princess line. You know, I'm a princess of God. I think our sinfulness just makes that too hard to really deal with well. But I'm definitely a child of God. I've been chosen, I've been adopted, and I'm not just adopted as an add-on, but only the true sons get the inheritance. I'm adopted as a fully-fledged child of God, and I will get the same inheritance as Jesus, relationship with God, being in the kingdom forever. That's fantastic, and I need to think more about that. So if I'm more aware of how God accepts me and that God is growing me through the difficult things, then when I get anxious about having to do something, I can say, yep, I know, but it's okay. Sit with the anxiety. It also means when someone comes to me, like my child or a friend, and they're very anxious, instead of trying to fix them, because that's what we always want to do, isn't it? Fix it. This poor person is really struggling with anxiety. Oh, how could I fix this? Listen. We can listen first. Let the child talk about it. If we've got all the answers, who wants to listen to us? We need to be able to listen. We need to be able to say, you know what, I don't have to defend myself. God knows what was in my heart at that time. And I need to repent of this attitude, or actually I was really doing my best to be loving and it's been taken the wrong way, and that's okay, God understands. I don't need to defend myself. That makes a huge difference. Someone was telling me earlier this morning how they were in a difficult relationship with a family member and they made the choice, the decision, to move towards that person. Regardless of the consequences, that person could have rejected their advances. But because she is clear about who she is in Christ and what Christ would have her do, she can move forward. The consequences may still be something we don't want to face, but that's life. Our reward is that Christ will say, "You were anxious, it was scary, but well done. You have done the Christ-like thing." And isn't that what we all really want deep down? So we don't defend, we keep calm. When there's anxiety in the house, we can say, it's okay, there's some anxiety, I can hear this out. I don't have to give reasons, I don't have to explain things. You know, remember, they're emotionally flooded. So just let them talk. Learn what you can from what they're saying. And don't shut down. This probably is more for men than women, but women are good at it too, is that ability to just say, oh, this is all too much for me, all this conflict, I'm just going to shut down. Life is so much easier if I just don't deal with it. I'm just going to shut down. Well, that's not having courage. That's a lack of courage. It's a lack of leadership. And what our families need is the leadership. So when we're with our children as mums, they need our leadership. They don't need us to back down and just do the easiest thing, which as an anxious parent, I can tell you is really hard. But learning to have courage and trusting in God to have the courage to do what we need to do, regardless of all those feelings, regardless of the headaches, regardless of whatever, we say, God, please give me courage. This is the right thing to do. I'm training my child. I need to help them not avoid this situation. So how are we going for time, Roz?
Another 5 minutes till you wanted to start
wrapping up. Okay. So one of the things that we can do as parents, so you're seeing that the child with anxiety, it's more about what's happening in the family than about the actual blaming the child for being anxious, if you like. So what needs to happen is that if at least one parent becomes less emotionally reactive, if there's less cutting off, that person hurt me, I'm never going to talk to them again. Or I don't see why I should do that for them. That's cutting off. That's stopping relationship from happening. That's not helpful. If a parent becomes able to observe patterns of behaviour between family members, you know, you might observe that your husband or you are always a bit antsy when a particular issue comes up with a particular child. You can observe it because you're not part of that. So you can't change that other parent, but you can change the way you relate. It's all about changing the way we relate to anxiety in the system. When we change our behaviour, it automatically has to change the behaviour of the people around us. In that, if I normally sulk and go away and cut off when I'm not happy, and then I suddenly make the choice that actually I'm going to keep listening to you and I'm not going to walk off, well, the other people are like, whoa. And it changes the way they relate to us because we've changed our behaviour. It has to change the dynamics. And they're like, hey, she's actually listening to me instead of cutting off. It changes. So only one person has to change for there to be some improvement. If both parents agree that they need to look at how they deal with anxiety, you've got a wonderful setup for a really good change. If you can see your own part in the system, that's a fantastic growth step. If you can explore what's going on in yourself, knowing your own symptoms of anxiety, knowing what pushes your buttons, why does it, when someone says that particular thing, why does it push your buttons? What is it about that? Is that what your mum used to say? Or is that what the kids at school said? Or is that something you've just always believed and you, yeah, think about what is, why it's pushing your buttons. If one adult in the family can take responsibility for their own feelings instead of denying their feelings, repressing their feelings or blaming, that makes a difference. If one parent can be more aware of that tendency to blame, if one parent can be less concerned about how to change others and more concerned about what can I do, that's more Christ-like, that's more mature, that is accepting that pain will happen, but how I deal with it is my responsibility. If one parent can be less reactive about their family of origin, your parents, your grandparents, your brothers and sisters, how much of our stuff goes back to that? If one person is able to monitor their own thinking patterns, and that's where you might have heard of cognitive behaviour pattern, it just means the way you think about stuff. So the shop assistant might be angry with me and I think, oh, what have I done wrong? Why doesn't she like me? Why is she behaving like that? That's being reactive. She may have had a bad day. She may have just had a customer who really gave it to her and I'm getting the brunt of that. It's got nothing to do with me. So I can respond by saying, instead of going, who does she think she is talking to me like that? I can say, oh, you're having a bad day, or I can just smile and be nice and not be personally affected by it. So that's the difference between being responsive, responding with a, oh, I wonder what's happened for that person, or I wonder what's going on. I don't have to take this personally. It's probably not meant personally, instead of being reactive. You can see what a difference that would make in a family. Less fusion between your thinking and feeling. A family that is anxious, it will be very hard to share your opinion, because the most anxious person in that family will have very strong opinions, and they don't want you to disagree with them. Because when you're very anxious, the safest place to be is where everybody else agrees with you. That makes sense, doesn't it? We like people to agree with us. And so I can give a good example of that. Unfortunately, my dad is a very anxious person, and I have to agree on which rose is the best rose to grow, or he gets very defensive. He is that anxious. Now, that's a really sad place to be. No opinion can be expressed about anything unless it agrees with his, or he will knock you down with an argument. He will sock it to you. I don't like that, so I say nothing. I give no opinions. That's what happens in an anxious family. There'll be those who will fight for their opinion because it means everything for you to agree, and there are those who think, I don't want to go there, I'm just going to shut down. We don't want those sort of families. So we need to be able to sit with some anxiety. We need to say, it's okay if people don't agree with me. God didn't die and put me in his place. I don't know everything. It's okay. We need to be able to keep anxieties where they belong. So if I'm anxious about child X, I don't go to child Y and say, what do you think's wrong with child X? The anxiety is my anxiety. It isn't fair to put it on the other child. It isn't fair to put it on anyone else. That anxiety is mine and I need to deal with it. I need to be able to, or families need to be able to allow others to truly think their own thoughts. I think Christians particularly really struggle with this. We get very worried if our young child starts to exhibit signs of unbelievism, if you like, questioning about God too much. We need to be careful that we're not actually shutting them down. We need to encourage them talking about what their doubts are, what their thoughts are about our faith. That is the most healthy way to help them understand why we believe what we believe. If we say, how dare you think that, you couldn't possibly think. What a stupid way to think, as if God doesn't exist. What does it do? It just closes the child down. They'll go somewhere else with their questions. And yet, you can see that that's a parent who genuinely wants their child to accept their faith and to grow in their own relationship with God. It's a very genuine desire. But our anxiety about, oh no, they're drifting away. Oh no, they've gone, they've lost it. And so we react instead of responding. So that's why dealing with anxiety is so important. You can see why it could lead them to follow the wrong peers, to get into drugs and alcohol. Being able to choose how we react to tension, able to manage our own anxiety, to self-soothe, in other words. Work out what helps you when you're anxious. You know, you can't always go out and sweep the stairs when you're anxious because you're not always home when it happens. But maybe there's something else you can do. Learn about you, learn about your kids, what will help them. And so on. So if one parent can do that, it will change the system. It'll change some of that anxious behaviour. So again, we go back to what God's advice was for Ahaz. To be careful, think first. When you're anxious, you're in a very emotionally reactive state. Remember that. Tell yourself that when you're not anxious so that you will remember that when you are anxious, because when you are anxious, you won't remember that, if that makes sense. It's one of those habits and thoughts that if you think about it, I actually have this be careful, keep calm, have courage on the bookshelf to remind me every day because I tend to be reactive. I'm learning, and God is being very gracious, to be more responsive and to be less reactive, to sit with my own anxiety, to say it's okay, you don't have to agree with me, that is perfectly fine. I can listen, I don't have to try and convert you to my way of thinking. It's okay. So what? That's a long road from being reactive to everything, because it disturbs your little area of what you think is control. I've got some sheets down here, and on them there are some suggestions of, because you came here no doubt with some expectation that you'd know, have a few ideas of what to do with anxiety if it shows in your child. There are a few suggestions there, but I just like to stress that it's really about how we respond to anxiety, that we don't react to it, that we respond to anxiety. It's really very much a part of what Kerry was talking about, that life happens and things are scary, but what level of concern is appropriate? Of course we protect our child when it's a serious issue. We're not saying that we should make them deal with everything. That's our job, to protect and nurture them. But there are many times when particularly an anxious child will want us to do for them. They want to dig those holes of avoidance, and we can help them step by step to actually get to the point where they can deal with it on their own. So you don't just push them out and say, you can do it, do it. We help them work out, what are they really frightened of? What is it? What is it that they're really frightened of? Maybe it's not what they think they're frightened of. And as they talk about it, they think, actually, you know, it's not that that I'm frightened of. It's that that I'm frightened of. It might be dancing. You know, I don't want to go to a party because I'd have to dance and I'm such an awkward cluster that everyone will just laugh at me. Well, maybe you could still enjoy going to the party, but take a pack of cards. There'll be someone else there who doesn't like dancing who'd love to play cards. We don't just shove them out there and say, yes, you will go because it's good for you. We help. That's the aim of a healthy family, is that we're helping and supporting each other. I think it's time for questions, so be kind to me. Does anyone have any questions? Yes, Dave. Daniel.
I see that anxiety sometimes has a lot of negative, but there is also positive things that come out of anxiety. My question was, is anxiety itself a negative thing? Because I know that the result of anxiety can sometimes be negative. But is anxiety itself a problem?
Anxiety itself is a symptom of something that we're afraid of. So anxiety itself is something we can just say, okay, I'm anxious, but how am I going to respond? But at the same time, there is what we're looking at is anxiety that is out of proportion to the threat. So when we're talking about generalised anxiety disorder, we're talking about anxiety that's really quite out of proportion to there is no boogie monster. We can show you that there is no boogie monster under there, but come bedtime, this irrational fear just comes up. And the Bible makes it clear that we're not to be overly concerned with the things of this world. We're not to be overly anxious. So yes, we are to fear the things that we ought to, you know, that make sense to fear. We don't let our child walk to school when they're four on their own. That would be child abuse. That would be neglect. We are careful, but there is being over careful, and we recognise that by all those avoidance things. Anyone else, Kerry?
Mm-hmm. Anxiety. I've just always looked at her and said she's a worrier. And recently I spoke to her parents and said she needs counselling.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting worse. And she's in a steady relationship, but it's a controlling relationship. They're Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And how do they find somewhere for her to go? Because I suggested that she needed a good counsellor, not necessarily a Christian counsellor, but the most important thing here was a good one. I'm prepared to send them an email or ring them today and say, I think this is where she fits. She needs some help. She can come home at 2 o'clock in the morning and wake someone up in the house because she can't go to sleep unless someone's awake. And it's a real problem because she's getting a little sister out of bed.
Yeah.
Parents.
So she wants them to do for her because she doesn't want to sit with that anxiety, but she's also getting, yeah, and anxiety will get worse.
And she's sort of yeah. feel like, you know, you put up at the beginning there, she's at the doctor, she's at the dentist, she's having all the checkups mm-hmm. to make sure that everything's okay. She has no money and she spends it on all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just looking at this now going, she needs help and she needs really quickly.
There's a lot of help available for anxiety. That's one of the beaut things is a lot of research has been done. You've got Black Dog, you've got, what's the other one? Feeling Blue, thank you. So even on the internet there's help, but most doctors are also, and certainly most counsellors, it's so prevalent and there's been a lot of research that she'd have to be unlucky to find a counsellor who couldn't actually help her with that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Worried about the crab under the bed.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? You really have to break that down into steps. So you might put the mattress on the floor so that there can't possibly be a boogie monster under there. You might talk about what things would help them. So what does that child want to do when they're that scared? Do they want to come into bed with you? Is that what's happening? Or they just cry? Yeah, which is very distressing. I think not getting distressed yourself is the first best step and saying, yep, I understand you're feeling afraid. I'm going to sit with you while you cry, but I need some sleep too, and in a little while I'm going to go back to bed. Also talk about, is there something that would make the room a safer place? Do they like the light on? Or not? Does it make any difference having the light on? I'm a bit appalled at what's been on TV the last week or so when they're suggesting that children have a mental health check and they're asking questions like, does the child sleep with a light on? Well, big deal. How many children have slept with the light on and you're functioning adults? And I don't know whether the media has used that as a sensationalising of it or... So they, you know, it may be a lot more careful and well done than that. I don't know. I haven't seen the sort of questions they're going to be asking the kids or the parents. But I kind of find it quite frightening that we might be labelling. Let's work as parents with understanding this stuff, but let's not label our kids. It just doesn't help. And I think 3 is just incredibly young. And I think a lot more money needs to be put into funding programs for kids suffering with autism, Asperger's, whatever. If we had a bit more money so that people knew what to do when they do realise, rather than saying, your kid's got autism, they're 3 years old, but they can't afford to do anything about it. What help is that? Kerry might have some advice on that too. And you probably are in contact with a lot more young kids who do have nightmares. Do you have some... Could you email that book to the title to Roz and Roz could send it out if you...
child's anxious, tired as best as she can. Now, it's not the time to show them because they worry. They worry because they see you worried. If you're worried, this must be really worth worrying about.
That's right. If they see us worried, that is a scary world. If my mum's worried, there's something really...
So if you can say, oh, look, I'm not worried. I'll show you what we can do. I'll pray with you before you go to sleep. And then, you know, you wake up and I pray about it.
Yep.
Say, Lord, be with him or her. So it's really not being anxious yourself because that makes them frightened. If it's big enough for you to be worried about, they have every right to be worried about.
Mm. We need to wind it up now, my boss over there.
I wanted to comment on something on that. I found a really good strategy for nightmares that I've used and it worked, was the next day, get them to talk about it and actually draw, get them to show you